Milk, minute, milk, minute, milk, minute, yeah.
Milk.
This is Maureen Farrell
and Heather O'Neill,
and this is the Milk Minute.
We're midwives and lactation professionals,
bringing you the most up-to-date evidence for all things lactation,
so you can feel more confident about feeding your baby,
body positivity,
relationships,
and mental health.
Plus, we laugh a little or a lot along the way.
So join us for another episode.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Milk Minute Podcast.
Welcome, 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 everyone. You sound like John Oliver.
I was actually feeling a little, I've got like Hunger Games on my mind.
Hunger Games.
And I was feeling like a Effie, you know,
oh.
Welcome. I don't know why. I just rewatched it the other day for shits.
It's a
and
great series.
It is, it is.
I've been thinking about rereading the Twilight series.
Ooh, you know what? That series gets funnier the more you read it.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever read Midnight Sun?
No.
So it's the first book rewritten from Edward's perspective, and it is the funniest thing I've ever read.
Really?
It's, I can't believe she actually wrote it and published it. It's so bad funny.
Really?
Like, you're just like, what? What, Stephanie Myers? Like, what did you
write? She's
writing?
Like, I got more money than God. I could write whatever I want.
It's so, especially if you like have read the Twilight books enough to be like to kind of remember like what characters are thinking during scenes,
mm-hmm.
you're like, oh, during that scene, Edward was literally like counting spider webs. Like, what is happening?
Bella's like, you're the love of my life. And he's like, two.
And he's
three.
Like, 7,000 blades of grass. When I was reading it, I was like, is this a joke?
Well, now that's
it
on
is.
My list.
You should.
That's so funny. Yeah. Clearly, I just need to check out in my life a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in your opinion, how prevalent do you think jaundice is? And do you think we overtreat it?
Oh, God. I don't know how prevalent it is. Personally, in my practice?
No. Well.
I'm just going to tell you how often I see it.
Okay.
I see low-level, like, quote, breast milk jaundice. Probably like once every 15 babies. Treatable jaundice, I've literally for babies I've caught like once. Now,
really?
In the hospital births that I do, I think it is way overtreated. I see a lot of babies with bilirubin levels that are not at clinical thresholds going off to treatment.
Yep. Well, I'm going to make a prediction.
Okay.
I'm going to predict that 20 years from now, we are not treating as much as we are now.
Yeah.
Let me just say that because a lot of this is like normal stuff that your baby has to go through after it's born. But, you know, we have to pay attention because I will explain later something rare but bad can happen to your baby, but rare.
Yeah. No. And
but
and
preventable.
I've definitely read some compelling theories about like the physiology of jaundice and like why it's normal and why it happens. So I hope we can get into that a little
bit.
Oh,
yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is going to be a little bit more like a lecture today.
I'm so excited, though, because I feel like I have a lot of knowledge about jaundice, but it's not very well organized.
Well, I hope I can make it easy for parents to understand, as well as if we have any nursing students or new nurses on an OB floor or even residents that want to be listening so they can understand that like the answer is to not stop breastfeeding.
Yes.
Because depending on where you're getting your information, it could be out of date and it could be incorrect. So I'm going to clear a lot of that up today. We're going to talk about how common it really is. Is it actually that big of a deal? Why breastfeeding gets such a bad rap with it? And why pediatricians seem to push formula when your baby's bilirubin is high?
Yeah.
And then how we can prepare for that and how we can leave the hospital still breastfeeding.
Sounds stellar. I'm so, so excited for this.
Yeah.
Before we hop into that, though, I do want to remind everybody that we have a new podcast. It's called Beyond the Boob. It's all about Heather's pregnancy and meets her midwife. And I love it. I feel like gushy, warm feelings about it.
I feel warm also.
But not for the same reason. Just because you peed your pants.
I am an incubator. Yeah, we would love to see you over at Beyond the Boob, either on Apple subscription or on our Patreon, patreon.com/milkminutepodcast. Speaking of, we have some new patrons to thank.
Yes. A huge, big, big thank you to Shelby, Elizabeth Colanero, who's a friend of mine, Kelsey Grathwall, Sarah Grace, and Lila Besser.
Thanks, guys. We love you. Let's take a quick minute to thank one of our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to answer a question about breastfeeding safe acne remedies.
That's interesting. Here we go.
Imagine a world where you seek lactation care and it's easy. And someone greets you at the door and they're nice to you. And they give you a hot cup of tea and let you sit on the couch and talk about all the issues, not just the breastfeeding issues.
What a cozy fantasy. Is there anywhere that's real?
Oh, it's real, girl. It's real. And I've been building it for quite a long time. My business is called Breastfeeding for Busy Moms, and me and every member of my team are trained in our three major tenets, which is accessibility, kindness, and personalization.
If you want to book a consult with Heather or anyone else on her team, you should head over to breastfeedingforbusymoms.com.
We do accept some limited insurance, and we'd be happy to walk you through it if you want to give us a call. And that number's on Google.
So go sit on the cozy couch with Heather at Breastfeeding for Busy Moms.
Love you guys.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Before we hop into the deep dive into jaundice, let's chat about a question from a listener. Today's question comes from Noelle. She asks, does anyone have any good breastfeeding safe acne remedies? My face is awful. My baby's 6 months and I can't blame it on her. My acne was bad before the pregnancy. Any advice? Welcome.
Yeah, we have a whole episode on skincare that we will link in the show notes if you want to do a really deep dive. But the good news and the short answer is most things for acne you can use while breastfeeding. So you can do benzoyl peroxide or salicylic acid, mm-hmm. that whole over-the-counter combo. Use it sparingly. You know, it will get into your skin, obviously, into your bloodstream. But
not in high amounts.
Not in high amounts.
And if you have any questions about specific medications, you know, because there's just too many for us to, like, run down the list right now, you can call the Infant Risk Helpline. You can use their app. You can go on the Mommy Meds app. There's just like a ton of free resources as well.
And I would definitely recommend some vitamin C. So it's anti-inflammatory and it definitely will help with any skin discoloration, and it's water soluble. So it's going to just, you'll pee it out. It won't get in your breast milk that much.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Well, Heather, can you drop some knowledge about jaundice?
Yeah.
Where are we starting?
Okay. Well, if a lot of you are out there pregnant listening to this and you haven't considered prepping for a potential jaundice situation postpartum, I want to let you know that you can do that because jaundice is one of the most common initial roadblocks in exclusive breastfeeding and barely anyone talks about it. So I actually build it into all of my prenatals.
Oh, okay. Nice.
And I'm not really saying this to scare you guys at all, but there are some situations where we can prepare and you know that I love to have a plan. So first of all, what the hell is it?
What is jaundice?
So I'm going to try to explain this in layman's terms so you all can understand it and really grasp it. And I use a lot of metaphors. Okay.
Yeah, I'm into it, man. I think this can be explained simply.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. You tell me. So jaundice is a condition that occurs in your baby or your alcoholic Uncle Jim.
Sure.
When bilirubin builds up in the body. So jaundice is actually the outcome. And bilirubin is the culprit. So mm-hmm. bilirubin itself is a waste product. It's garbage. It's trash. We don't need it. And this occurs in the body when we break down red blood cells. And the average lifespan of a red blood cell is about 120 days. So us sitting right here, we're making some, we're killing some, they're dying. When they die, we have to get rid of them and the waste.
Right. So. And we turn them into bilirubin and we poop them out.
Ideally, yeah. So matter is not created or destroyed. So we just break it down into something else and we have to get rid of it. And there's a lot going on during labor and delivery that can cause broken down red blood cells in your baby's body. And as those cells break down, bilirubin is released as the byproduct that needs to be eliminated. But the baby has to do that now. We used to do that through the umbilical cord through our liver when the baby was inside.
Right.
So now the baby has to suddenly do this themselves.
Snip that cord and say good luck.
Right. So if we don't eliminate this bilirubin garbage, it gets stored in your baby's skin, which gives it that lovely yellow hue.
Mm, and like in their sclera and all
everywhere. Everywhere. And you can check their gums, mm-hmm. everything like that. And 60% of newborns have some form of jaundice.
Mm.
And most of the time, it's considered just part of getting started in life. And this is otherwise known as physiologic jaundice. Yes. So that's what you were talking about when you're talking about the majority of your patients, which is like, meh, it happens.
Yeah, it's low level. It occurs after the first 24 hours and baby's not really symptomatic. You're just like, cool, we'll just keep an eye on it.
Right. But of those 60%, about 10 to 19% develop more severe jaundice that requires some intervention.
That's a wide range. That's like saying, like, you know, this or double this.
Like this or double that.
That's a big range, actually.
Yes. So that's known as pathologic jaundice. Mm-hmm. And how do we eliminate it? So we've got all this going on.
Yeah.
All right. So when your baby is born, they have a whole plumbing system inside their body that needs to be kickstarted.
Oh, yeah. Some things need to go. Some things need to start. It's like transition from intrauterine life to like being earthside is a little weird.
Yeah. You go from being a closed system to an open system.
Oh, I love that. It's like breast pumps.
Yeah. Yeah. So I kind of think about it as like a bunch of empty tubes that need to be primed and the faucet needs to be turned on. Mm-hmm. And so their whole system's brand new, and sometimes it takes a minute to kickstart this, kind of like turning on the water in an old house for the first time.
Right, right. We chatted about rusty pipe syndrome last time.
Right. You have pipes too.
We're just going to roll with the metaphors forever.
Forever. So yeah, when you turn that water on, the metaphorical water in the house, you get sputtering, weird noises shooting out of the faucet. It's not always pretty. And this can get tricky if you're trying to eliminate a bunch of garbage through a brand new sputtering system. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Got it.
So now we need to talk about the liver. Okay, so the liver, as it relates to the plumbing situation, is the garbage can of the body.
Got it.
Okay, so the liver helps us transform compounds into things we can either use, like Tylenol for pain relief, which is why you're not supposed to take a bunch of Tylenol if you drank the night before, because it's all compounded in your liver, or conjugated, I should say. Or we send it down the poop chute to get rid of, like bilirubin. So the liver kind of makes that call. It's like, you to the left, you to the right. And your body will send the bilirubin to the liver to be conjugated, meaning converted into a form that can be excreted. And after it's conjugated, it gets put into baby's poo and deposited in their diaper and out of their system forever. However, if there is no poo to be had, like your baby isn't really eating, there's no bulk to deposit the conjugated bilirubin
or
into.
Or it's the normal first couple days postpartum and they just take like one big poop and that's it.
Yeah, but if the bilirubin's hanging out there with nothing, no like log to hang on to, it can be sent back upstream, which is the weird part that kind of freaks out every pediatrician everywhere.
Right.
So it can then be unconjugated and put back into the bloodstream.
Okay. Okay, so why is this a big deal, though?
Okay. This is a big deal because the issue lies in the fact that when the baby is yellow and chock-a-block full of bilirubin garbage, it can affect their brain. So it essentially depresses their entire central nervous system and makes them very lethargic. And obviously, this is an issue if you're trying to get baby to breastfeed and they're simply laying there like a limp noodle with their mouth open.
Yeah.
So if they don't eat, they don't create poop, and the plumbing just keeps sputtering and the bilirubin just keeps floating around with no exit.
Right. And this is the loop we get stuck in. Often when we do have, you know, jaundice babies who are starting to be symptomatic, we're like, feed them more. And parents are like, but how? They won't eat.
They're lying there with their arms to their sides, like total submission.
Or, you know, when patients tell me like, oh, my baby's so amazing, they've been sleeping so long. I'm like, tell me more.
Yeah, tell me more about that. Well, and the issue is the more the brain is exposed to this bilirubin and the longer it's exposed, the greater the chances of a rare but preventable condition called kernicterus.
Oh, kernicterus.
I love that
word. I feel like that is cantankerous. Like those are the same word.
But they're not, although I love both of those words.
Me too. It just feels good in your mouth. You know?
Yeah, I do know. I do know. So kernicterus presents with intellectual disability, cerebral palsy features, and hearing loss, among other terrible, terrible things.
Yeah.
So because it's preventable, obviously, we're going to be like screening and we're going to be treating maybe more aggressively than
is strictly necessary. And I think we see that kind of across the board, at least in this country, where unfortunately a lot of our healthcare decisions are really fear-based. you know, and we see this with groupie strep. We see this with the
mammograms.
Right. With so many things across the board where the screenings we're doing and the preventative treatments we're doing maybe aren't actually making our numbers any better than places that don't do them the same way. It's really tricky, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to have just these like giant data sets to know too, like, oh, are we overtreating? Are our numbers any different from numbers in this comparable country?
Like, yeah. And people are starting to look at that.
Yeah.
Because there are risks to it, but no one talks about it because when they dangle Kernicterus and they're like, your baby could be brain damaged.
Could be cantankerous.
It's like, okay, whatever you want.
Yeah. Yeah. And it can be really scary. And it is a possibility. It's not like it never happens. However, I think there's also ways to treat that can be supportive of breastfeeding.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. And I'm like, you're telling me all of these cave people and indigenous people that never had any of this treatment, all their babies just had Kernicterus?
No. And I really am curious, I don't know, like what... Do we have any data on like what the level of Kernicterus incidence was before UV treatment for jaundice?
Yeah, that data is out there, but I didn't put that in this because I wanted to just keep it
simple. I'm just curious.
But we can have a follow-up.
That would be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so now that you have a rudimentary understanding of what bilirubin and jaundice is, let's talk about why it affects some babies and not others.
Ooh, this is fun.
Okay. So number one is you've got a problem with the garbage can.
Okay. So the liver?
The liver.
Okay. Got it. I am having a little bit of trouble following every part because it's a complex metaphor, but I'm here for it. I'm a high functioning person. Let's do it.
Okay. So we have a liver issue.
Okay.
The garbage can is not functioning as it should to eliminate the garbage.
Got it.
So this is all pathological jaundice. This isn't normal. We're now in abnormal jaundice. So the first problem we can have with the garbage can liver is that it's premature. So babies born before 37 weeks have livers that just aren't ready to handle everything the body is throwing at it. And they're just not at full capacity. So we definitely screen these kids at 24 hours. And we are not surprised if they are jaundiced because they are probably closer to that 19%.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, that's probably the wider range there, the 10 to 19%. They're probably closer to the...
Man, statistics are weird.
Aren't they?
I just don't want to be a statistician, but sometimes I wish I had that knowledge, you know?
I wish my brain worked that way, but it certainly does not. So the other problem is we just have a medically unwell baby. So the liver is being taxed in a lot of other ways.
Right. So maybe we have like one other comorbidity.
Hepatitis
or something.
We have drug use going on that affected the liver.
Question. You might not know the answer. Do we see a higher comorbidity between babies who are born to GDM moms, gestational diabetes, with jaundice?
No.
Okay, cool.
Although GDMers often have preemies, like before 37 weeks, or they have other things going on, but that is not listed on the higher risk things.
Cool, thanks.
So the other thing with the liver is we have too much garbage itself. So too much bilirubin that the liver is like overwhelmed. So this is probably what, you know, my trash can looks like the day before trash day, you know, where it's like, oh my God, could
You're
we
like,
squash
don't
it down
shove another
anymore?
Bag in?
Yeah, please. Can someone just take this out? So this can occur for a few different reasons. So number one would be significant bruising from delivery. Mm-hmm. So if your baby has a super bruised face.
Right. Maybe they got forceps or vacuum assisted delivery.
Yeah. And a bruise is very literally broken down red blood cells and your body has to clean it up. So baby's body wants to clean up that little bruise and get everything back to normal. And so it's literally pounding the liver with all of this garbage. And the liver's like, help me, I'm drowning. So that's why we will screen significantly bruised babies at 24 hours.
Yeah.
So then we have extensive hemolysis, which is breaking down of red blood cells. And this is most usually from a blood type incompatibility. Mm-hmm. So this is where I lose people. Okay. So we're going to try to keep this
simple. I understand why, because this is a complicated issue. And I feel like I have yet to meet like pediatric staff that explain this well to parents.
Oh, God. Well, I hope this goes well. Let me know.
So like, let's listen to this and then maybe just memorize it to tell your patients.
Okay. So a blood type incompatibility occurs when mom has an O positive or any negative blood type and baby is anything else. So this is when there's some mixing of blood between mom and baby at delivery, and then mom's antibodies to the baby's blood goes to war with the baby's blood type. So a lot more of the baby's blood is broken down and has to be cleaned up by its liver. So here's an example. Like me, I'm O positive. Mm-hmm. My husband is B positive. Ooh. So there's a chance that this baby inside of me right now takes after my husband and is B positive. So O to B, that's what we would call it. So I'm O, baby could be B. That is actually one of the worst ones.
We don't know why. Cool.
But when it mixes at delivery, my body is like, whoa, B? I don't know about B. That sounds foreign to me. I should kill it.
Okay.
And those antibodies.
Yeah, and your body goes all in. It's like, we're going to kill that now.
Yeah. And so my antibodies end up in baby's blood and it just wreaks havoc. And it kills any of the weak red blood cells that are, you know, on their last leg anyway. And it just kind of expedites the hemolysis mm-hmm. process. And the same thing applies if mom is any negative blood type. O negative, yes. A negative, B negative, AB negative, etc. And your baby is positive. So you will know that you're negative blood type if you received a Rogam shot at 28 weeks. Mm-hmm. And if you are negative, they will 100% do the baby's blood Rh factor to see if baby is negative or positive. Mm-hmm. If they're negative, you don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. Negative and a negative equals no problem.
Yeah.
Negative and a positive could be angry antibodies.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, for your practical use of this as a parent, like you don't have to remember all of those details, but if in the postpartum a doctor mentions ABO incompatibility, you could be like, oh right, my blood is mad at baby's blood and it's hurting baby, got it.
And it, you know, on a microscopic level it's violent, but really it's not your fault,
it's nothing you did wrong, it's just like that's the basic concept. It's like your blood hates your baby's blood. And that's just what we have to deal with now. Yeah. And it will, we can resolve it, right? We can fix it. It's not a permanent issue.
Yeah. And you should have some labs from like the first prenatal visit mm-hmm. where it tells you your blood type. So most people, by the way, if you don't know it, don't feel bad. Most people that come to me at 36 weeks have no idea what their blood type is.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't know till I got pregnant the first time. Then I was like, oh, positive. Lovely.
Oh, you too?
Yeah.
So go get on your lab report sheet and look up it'll be either type in screen or an ABO mm-hmm. type, and it'll tell you what your type is.
Yeah. So. This is reminding me, I meant to order Eldon cards for a homeschool lesson for my son. So Eldon cards are a way to type blood at home.
Oh, yeah.
It's not quite as accurate as a lab, but they're literally like 99% accurate. And honestly, I feel like labs make more than 1% of mistakes sometimes. So it's pretty close.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And they're really fun. You take 4 drops of blood and you mix it with these little things. And then anyway, it's really fun and it's like a good lesson. But also I use them at home births a lot, right? Yeah. For Rh negative moms who maybe were on the fence about Rogam. They don't know if they want their second dose. I'm like, let's do this right here. We can confirm anything by lab if we want to, but like this can kind of give us a starting point for your mm-hmm. decision tree.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bring one to mine.
Yeah, I will. I usually bring them just and like, I work with a lot of people without insurance who don't want to send off for labs too. It's totally fine. So I'm like, well, let's at least do this.
You're so cool.
Thanks.
What a great idea.
They're fun.
They are fun. Okay. So last reason that I have listed, there's about a million other reasons, but they're all smaller. Rarer, smaller.
Okay.
So a G6PD deficiency.
What is that? Should I know what that is?
It's genetic.
Okay.
So this is much more common in Black and African American folks, and it's rare, but basically it's an enzyme deficiency in your red blood cells that causes them to die early.
Interesting.
So instead of having like a 120-day cycle, they might have a much shorter cycle.
Sounds stressful for your bod.
Yeah, but usually it's exacerbated by something else.
Right.
You know, so it usually doesn't like stand alone, but it's a good thing to know. So if you have it and your baby, you should know your baby.
Can you do like a blood testing for that?
Probably, yeah.
Okay,
cool. Yeah, probably.
I don't know.
I mean, at that point, it's like refer out.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, that's why I'm like, I haven't heard about this one. this one is going to the hematologist.
Yeah, so all of that, just to regroup, bruising, extensive hemolysis due to either the blood type incompatibility or a G6PD deficiency causes too much garbage. Your trash can is super full.
Every time we talk about hemolyzed blood, I just think about all the times I've gotten messages back from the labs where they're like, the sample was hemolyzed. And I'm like, well, fuck you.
Yeah, well, really? Because I ran it down there and I was sweating. Okay, so the second reason for pathologic jaundice is we have a lack of poop. This is baby isn't eating or baby is suckling, but milk hasn't come in yet, so they're not transferring. And this is otherwise known as starvation jaundice or breastfeeding jaundice.
I do not like that those are apparently synonyms.
Hold on. I know. God. So this happens typically in the first 3 days of life. Big shocker. You know, where your milk isn't really in yet.
Yeah.
This is usually breastfeeding people because if you're formula feeding, you're just formula feeding.
Right, and you can feed more on demand. It's not.
Yeah. Right. And that you can see it. Mm-hmm. So you know the volume that's going in there. So this I kind of think about the sputtering plumbing system with not enough water or milk to go through and make the poop to complete the process. And so people get very confused. And this is where breastfeeding gets a bad rap. And they think formula is going to fix everything. And it really doesn't. Really doesn't. I'll explain that in a minute. Let's leave that there. We're going to come back to that. Third reason for pathologic jaundice is we didn't identify it because they had a darker skin color at baseline.
Yeah. And honestly, it's like, so when your healthcare provider uses the like forehead screen, those are going to be less accurate for darker skin. And same with like the tools that I use postpartum too. I use an icterometer, which is like the less advanced technology of that, but actually really good for screening in low resource settings. It's going to be less accurate when we have darker skin. So often we're going to have to do labs for that.
Yeah. And so for me, it, you know, the risk, you know, it's like, well, your risk of having jaundice is increased if you're Black or Asian. And it's like,
no, the risk of people missing jaundice.
And then you end up in a situation where you're stuck in that loop where you can't get rid of it is greater because we done missed it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
and that just ties into like the whole risk profile for maternal infant health in communities where we have health disparities because of things like racism, right? Like jaundice is complicated. We talked about some other reasons why it could happen. Like, and you know, those people in those communities are going to then like maybe not be screened properly, or, you know, it's just like, it's really difficult.
Yeah, it is. All right. The next one is breast milk jaundice. This is different. So this is where I think we lose a lot of people too. So we are breastfeeding and there's enough milk and everything is normal, but your baby turns a little yellow a week after coming home. And so breast milk jaundice does not harm your baby as long as your baby is acting normally and feeding and wetting adequate diapers and the bilirubin levels aren't dangerously high. It just is what it is. And so this is one of those things where it's like a delayed onset. It's going to run its course in the absence of other issues. And we just really don't need to worry about it that much.
Yeah. And I see this most often. When I see it, it's usually like at the end of the first week. And then it can stick around for like 3 weeks. And that's kind of what freaks parents out mostly. Is they're like, why are they still yellow?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, because they are and your baby's fine. Here's the risks to look out for. Like, you know, here's the signs that things are bad. And if that doesn't happen, it's fine.
Yeah. And I don't know. Yeah. That's the answer. I don't know. It is specific to breast milk, but it's really, so this is where people think it's like, oh, they must be starving.
Yeah.
Because they're breastfeeding and the breast milk is either not enough. And I'm like, no, that's different.
I see that.
That's starvation jaundice.
I see.
So we also need to do a quick nod to delayed cord clamping.
Sure.
Because this is where a lot of providers are nervous to delay the cord clamping and let baby receive all of their blood volume from the placenta because they are afraid of polycythemia, where they have more red blood cells that can have more breakage, hemolysis.
And more bilirubin.
And more bilirubin. However, delayed cord clamping has not increased pathological jaundice.
Yep. And that's something I reiterate to people a lot. Like, yes, it can increase the incidence of jaundice, but of the normal kind of jaundice.
Yes. The American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology does have a position statement on that.
Sure they do.
And so does the American College of Nurse Midwifery. Yeah. So they both agree with all the evidence that they've reviewed that delayed cord clamping, the benefits greatly outweigh the risks of physiologic normal jaundice. Right. So yes, your baby will be polycythemic technically.
Yes.
And no, it doesn't matter.
Yes. It's also hard when like we realize the norm that we've set is immediate cord clamping, but delayed cord clamping is the physiologic norm. So then the norm should maybe like adjust.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are always very frustrating to me when we have those conversations. And I'm like, yes, I see that you're saying it's polycythemic, but like, what if that is the norm in your brain?
Yeah.
Then that's normal. And like, do you get it?
I get it. Yeah. I totally get it. You're like, what if nature already figured this out?
Yeah.
Serious question. All right, let's take a quick break to thank a couple sponsors. And when we get back, we're going to talk about how jaundice is treated and how you can prepare for it. I tell all my patients who are brand new parents to put a list of soothing techniques on the refrigerator so they can both remember what they've already tried for soothing baby.
I like to put a happy tummy on that list. It's a natural herbal wrap that soothes and relieves pain instantly, and it's so fuzzy.
It's so great. It helps baby sleep at night, resolves colic, gas, or constipation, and it's great because it has a little cute animal on the front for when they're doing tummy time, which provides gentle pressure to help them get their toots out.
And you know what? They're not just for babies. They have them for teens and adults, too.
So if you're struggling with those period pains, get your herbal warm Happy Tummy Wrap today by going to happytummy.com. And if you love us, enter promo code MILKMINUTE10 for 10% off.
That's MILKMINUTE10 for 10% off your Happy Tummy.
Thank you so much for supporting the show.
Heather, when you were nursing Heidi, did you get thirsty every single time?
Every single time I sat down to nurse, it was like the Sahara Desert had taken up residence in my mouth.
Same. And my go-to drink right now is Liquid IV.
Oh, me too. Liquid IV makes your water work harder because it has a hydration multiplier in it that's great tasting, non-GMO, and it actually has cellular transport technology that delivers hydration to the bloodstream faster and more efficiently than water alone.
You can also get their immune support blend, energy blend, or even one that helps with your sleep health.
My personal favorite is lemon lime, and I think it actually makes me drink water 2 times faster, which is always handy when you have a screaming baby in the room.
I really like the tangerine, and if you want to try that today, you can go to the link in our show notes and use our discount code MILK_MINUTE for 15% off your order.
That's MILK_MINUTE for 15% off your Liquid IV today. Happy drinking.
Welcome back, everybody. I don't know about you, but I'm excited to get down to the practical stuff here.
We're always excited to get practical.
I'm just always excited about these episodes.
I love you on Wellbutrin. It's the best.
All right. Where are we?
All right. So how do we prepare if we are at risk of having a baby with jaundice?
Mm-hmm.
Number one, if every single one of your kids was jaundice, or you know there's a chance of a blood type incompatibility because you did what I asked and figured out your blood type and your partner's blood type.
Yep. Shout out to Ivan, who doesn't know his blood type. Thanks, dude.
If you know there's a chance you may have a baby less than 37 weeks. If you have a darker skin color and want to make sure you have your bases covered, express colostrum prenatally, please,
yes.
If you can.
We have an episode about how to do that and why and all of that, and I hope we covered jaundice in that.
Probably we did,
but I don't know.
It's listed in the show notes,
yeah.
But it's also a how-to, so we're going to leave the how-to for that episode. But colostrum has a stimulant in it that's actually meant to help pass that black sticky meconium turd out of your baby's poop chute.
And dude, that stuff is sticky. I don't know if you've experienced this. I've had some babies who they poop a bunch of meconium and they don't poop for like 3 days.
Uh-huh.
And the parents are like, what's wrong? And I'm like, it's a meconium plug. And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, all right, we'll do all these massage and the thing. And then suddenly they poop and this like tiny little bit of meconium comes out. And then it's like transitional poop, breast milk poop, 4 days of poop.
It's like soft serve ice cream every time you wipe their butthole, like a balloon of poo keeps coming out.
It's lovely.
Like, awesome. Yeah. So if baby needs some food in order to help make some poop to excrete the bilirubin, the pediatrician may come in and say, we really need to get some volume in the baby and would like to supplement some formula to help baby eliminate this jaundice. That's literally exactly what they will say.
It is.
And you can smile and pull out your frozen tubes of colostrum that you express prenatally and say, no problem. I have some volume right here. And then you can use the milk you've already expressed instead of switching to formula right away.
Yes. And you can feed it in the way that you want to, even if you're using formula. You can still syringe feed, you can spoon feed, you can cup feed, whatever you want to do.
Yes. We're taking it feed by feed at that point. And so other than that, we can express colostrum in the first 24 hours. So if you are looking at your baby and you're like, yeah, this baby's like really sleepy. I'm O positive. We got the baby's blood type back. They're B. Right. You know, like they haven't done the screening yet at 24 hours, but it's looking like this child is turning a little yellow. It starts in their face. So their face will start yellow. And then the yellow starts to move down the body.
Right. And that's part of our assessment, especially working out of hospital, you know, when I don't have as advanced tools. I'm like, okay, what is our yellow on the forehead, on the chest, on the belly, on the legs? And, you know, we'll see different levels.
And I mean, that's what they used to do in the 60s and 70s.
It's actually still a pretty good screening protocol.
It really is. I mean, listen, if it's just the face, I'm like, you're good.
Yeah.
If it's the face and chest, I'm like, you're probably still good. Are you eating? Perfect. Mm-hmm. If it's all the way down past the belly button to the hips, I'm like, And if your baby is a complete orange carrot and their toes are jaundiced, we need to do something about that. We got to do something for sure. So early and frequent feedings or milk expression is really important if it looks like your baby is getting super sleepy and not latching in the first 24 hours. So please hand express some colostrum at that time onto a spoon or into a medicine cup and just drip it in their mouth, literally.
Yeah. Now, I recently had a hospital kind of tell off a patient for spoon feeding because they said it increased the risk of aspiration. I think they just don't know how to spoon feed.
And it doesn't matter if they aspirate breast milk anyway. It'll just get absorbed.
But the way that we do this, there's some really good videos on globalhealthmedia.org. But you really have baby like sitting up and they like lap at the little pool of milk like a kitten. You just like put it on their bottom lip.
I prefer a cup.
Yeah.
Personally.
I like a cup.
It's less messy. But whatever. And actually a syringe because you're not even feeding that much.
Yeah. And with a syringe too. I just squirt a little in their mouth. Let them swallow. Squirt a little more.
Make sure they're swallowing it.
And I had to give my daughter some medication in a syringe last night. You know when the first squirt is a little stuck and then you do it too hard? I almost made her vomit right in my face because I hit the back of her throat.
You're like, oops, sorry. I forgot to wash the syringe last time I used it. You get the sticker for the day. And I do just want to remind you that like one drop of colostrum swiped around in the inside of your baby's mouth is still helpful.
Yes.
Because you can activate the top of the tube, like the whole GI tube. Mm-hmm. When you activate the top, it can activate the bottom and help them pass the meconium. Yeah. So even if it's just one drop, don't be sad. Use it. Don't waste it.
And digestion starts by thinking about food. Okay. We start all of our like digestive juices and stuff when we think about food, when we smell it, when we see it. And when we taste it, we're actually digesting sugars in our mouth.
Yeah.
So that is actually a really important part of digestion.
Yeah. So don't knock it till you swipe it.
Yeah.
All right. So how do we treat it and keep up with breastfeeding if baby has been diagnosed with jaundice?
This is the question.
Okay. So now you're at 24 hours postpartum. Baby has not passed the screening tool. They've done the beep, beep, beep with the transcutaneous bilirubin checker on the head.
And they're like, student, do it again. Do it again.
And they've been identified as having pathologic jaundice. And the pediatricians are probably going to recommend treatment with phototherapy, which is a special wave of blue light. It's not actually UV light.
Interesting.
So many people think that's the case.
We call it UV light usually.
But it ain't.
Interesting.
And the purpose of this light is actually to help conjugate the bilirubin for the liver.
Right, which is why we tell people to bring their babies out in the sunshine when they're jaundiced.
Yes, or an indirect light in the window. So essentially what's happening there is the skin and then the blood absorbs the light and helps to process the bilirubin like the liver does to help get it to the next phase of the plumbing, the poop chute. And this treatment was first discovered in 1958. but the practice was not established until the early 80s.
Okay.
However, most of us born in the 80s, like me, can tell you that the majority of the time they were still telling parents to undress their baby and let them sleep by the window in indirect sunlight.
I mean, I still tell people to make sure they get their babies exposed to indirect sunlight every day and themselves, because it just makes you happier.
Exactly. So previously, and even when I first started in my career, the treatment was actually in a special bed with lights on the bottom and
like
on the top.
Like a tanning bed.
Oh my gosh.
And they put little goggles on baby.
It was huge.
Yeah.
And the baby was meant to lay naked, other than wearing a diaper and goggles, all alone on this bed for as many hours as possible. Mm-hmm. And parents are instructed only to remove the baby from the bed when it's time to feed. And this resulted in super freaking stressful situations with really pissed off babies and crying parents.
Yep.
And additionally, it led to less frequent breastfeeding attempts since a sleepy baby has been separated from their food source. So we're missing those cues, or babies not giving the cues because they're completely separated. They can't smell it. They can't see it. They can't feel it. And then also, mom is exhausted and much more likely to pass out for hours at a time instead of feeding. So if baby
isn't crying, more barriers between you and feeding your baby, like the less often you're going to do it.
Absolutely.
It's just,
And then feeding on a strict schedule. So to mitigate that, they'd set their alarm every 2 to 3 hours.
Right. And in that case, they're like, oh, only every 2 to 3 because baby needs the phototherapy between.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we have really good research that shows that scheduled feedings in the beginning lead to engorgement of the breasts. Which makes it harder for a baby to latch, and it turns into a whole shit show,
low supply
and low weight gain.
Which then exacerbates this whole Billy Rubin nightmare.
Right. And so recently, in the past couple of years, we've started trying to transition to Billy blankets.
Which I love. So
I love them so much better.
Ask for one if your baby needs treatment.
Yeah. So the baby will lay on this blanket, just a diaper and the goggles. We got to protect the balls and the balls.
Yeah.
So you can hold the baby while they're receiving the treatment. However, they still do like to have an overhead light over the baby, so they prefer it to be in the bassinet in a lot of places. But I have been known to put sunglasses on parents and just like move the light over them and be like, close your eyes.
Yeah.
You know, like if you can do this for an hour, that's like one more hour closer to getting the hell out of here.
If you can treat while baby's feeding, like...
Well, so maybe, but also... Part of what, let me get into it.
Okay.
So please do not skip any feedings that baby requests. So if you're holding baby and they're making hand to mouth movements or trying to bite the blanket or stirring at all, take them off the light and remove the goggles so you can do eye care.
Can we do Billy blanket without goggles?
Technically,
feeding?
No.
Okay.
Has it been done?
Yes, I'm sure it has. I mean, I've seen it done, but I don't...
Yeah. Yeah, but their little eyeballs are so sensitive that I probably wouldn't. Mm-hmm. However, you know, nurses and pediatricians are going to give you shit about it if every single time you go in there, the baby is feeding and not on the light.
Yeah, for sure.
And so as long as you know that if the baby decides to eat 14 times that day, there's a chance you might be discharged a day later and we might have to prolong it. So what?
Yeah.
So what? You know, like, that sucks, but at least your supply is intact.
Right, because the light and food are equally important in this treatment, right?
Yes. Yes. And that's my whole point here. So if baby can't or won't latch during the feeding time, please pump and give any colostrum that you can get out.
And the reality is, like, it's not, there is absolutely nothing about formula versus breast milk that makes one or the other better for treatment. We just have to make sure baby eats something.
Yeah. And so if you don't have something for the baby to eat, if the pump's not working or whatever, you can use some formula, but please pump if you're using formula.
Yeah. If your goal is to breastfeed and you're feeding anything but breast milk, make sure you're pumping at the same time.
Yeah. So as soon as they're done eating, you put them right back on the blanket with the goggles. And just, again, we're going to say it again. The light is important, but so is the food. So pediatricians will scare the living hell out of parents and threaten brain damage in their baby if they don't leave them on the light long enough. And then people are afraid to take them out of the light. Folks, the kid needs both and your boobs need the kid.
And like, I feel like we're ragging a lot on peds teams in this episode, but honestly, for good reason, because Heather and I have sat there while peds is rounding on dozens and dozens of patients and just watch them scare these mothers so badly.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Like, they don't want to feed their babies.
Right.
They will let the baby scream. Just scream. And they'll just keep putting a binky back in, standing there crying over. I know, that was me. Yeah. I was there for 5 days with my 36-weeker, who was jaundiced as hell in that big bed with the completely separated from me with my giant engorged boobs doing formula, not pumping.
It's tough.
And I'm like,
right. What was
how is that
there?
Better?
It's not. Yeah. And I just like, I don't know. Recently I've had conversations with people who are just like, wow, the hospitals near you must be really terrible. I'm like, yeah, I guess they are, because we see this all the time.
All the time.
And it's awful. And even if there's an emergency with your baby, you shouldn't be spoken to like that.
Yeah. No one should be telling you that you are going to cause your baby brain damage for feeding them. We're already in the hospital. Okay, we're already here. We're already doing the treatment. If my baby gets a rare kernicterus diagnosis, it's because there's something more wrong than bruising or a blood type incompatibility. Most of the time, it's a perfect storm of things, or there's some genetic situation going on where we have like biliary atresia or pyloric stenosis, or something is kinked in the plumbing and it's not going through.
Right.
You know, so it's like, don't be pointing at me. I'm the one who's at the hospital. So if you think there's kernicterus, it's probably not my boobs or the fact that I wanted to hold my baby.
Yeah.
It's probably something you need to look into. And thank God we know that
now. And that's why we're here.
So, and that's why we're here. You're welcome.
It's very frustrating. And I it's just honestly, like, the reason I do this work is because I think people deserve to be spoken to with compassion.
Yeah, and there's no reason. People are scared enough
ridiculous.
Already.
Honestly, it's like, that sounds ridiculous to be like, I'm a midwife because I think we should be nice to people. but really, like, I think y'all deserve basic decency.
Yeah, I mean,
at the most vulnerable time of your lives.
You're already looking at a perfectly healthy baby scared to death.
Yeah.
And so wondering if anything you're doing is right. And literally, people come into your room and only tell you what you're doing wrong, and they never tell you what you're doing right. So part of what I do is I go in and I start making a list out loud of what they're doing right. Oh my gosh, look how you're holding your hand naturally in the perfect position. That's
like
so
that.
Cool. You know, just to like, it's helpful to know what you're doing right. So if you take your baby off the billy blanket to feed them, I'm going to start by saying that's awesome that you turned off the light to feed your baby, that you took the goggles off, that you're prioritizing feeding, because as you know, that's half the battle with coming over jaundice. You know, just make sure you wrap baby right back up as soon as you're done and turn the lights back on. Handled. You don't need to be a dick.
Yep.
That's it. I'm sorry. This has turned into a bit of a PSA. But I mean, it affected me personally, and it could potentially affect me again in the home birth situation.
Absolutely.
And I'll let you know, but we're going to be prepared. I'm going to definitely, you know, get my colostrum prenatally if I can.
Yep.
We're going to bring your elder card. We're going to see what blood type this child has by dripping some cord blood.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And if we have to transfer to the hospital for treatment, we're going to be prepared to advocate for ourselves.
Actually, there's a lot of research out there that shows that being able to order a billy blanket to your house is much more preferable than a readmit to the hospital.
A lot of places are starting to do that. I've been really tempted to like order one for rentals, but it's the tough thing is like midwifery here isn't fully integrated into the hospital system. You know, like if my work was integrated where I could just call up the PD and be like, oh yeah, can you order this for my patient? Here's their labs. You know, you keep an eye on it from afar. Can you approve home care? Like, that would be perfect, you know? that would be great.
That would be great. You know, like, to be in a home that actually has windows that aren't UV blocking.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
I know.
Like, every room I've been in where the parents are like, oh, I didn't put the baby under the blanket because I just set them in the window. And I'm like, bad news.
The, like, 4-inch glass window.
Bad news. These windows at the hospital are UV blocked. And they're like, oh, shit. Yeah. Like, you're going to need to put them on the blanket.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sigh.
But, I mean, I think we're going in the right direction. Starting to have treatments that are breastfeeding friendly. We're definitely having lots more education around it. So I hope we keep doing that.
All right. I hope that was helpful for you. Please let me know if you have any questions. You can email us at milkminutepodcast@gmail.com. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to give an award to one of our valuable listeners who we love so much.
You never know. It might be you.
Could be. If you're pumping milk away from your baby at all, at work, or wherever you go, you deserve a Bougie product to make that easier for you.
You deserve a Series Chiller, and frankly, I could not live without one right now.
The Series Chiller is an excellent way to store your breast milk safely, and it keeps your breast milk cold for 24 hours.
It is the only thing I use to transport my breast milk to and from work while I'm working. It's got a sleek and beautiful design, lots of great colors, high quality materials, and manufacturing.
Series Chill also has other products that you might want to check out too. My personal favorite is the Milk Stash.
They have a great nipple shield that actually changes colors, and it's not clear like all the other ones.
And you know how we feel about that.
If you want to have your very own Series Chiller, please go to the link in our show notes and use code MILKMINUTE15 at checkout.
That's MILKMINUTE15 for 15% off your Series Chill products. Enjoy.
Welcome back, everybody. Are you ready to get an award?
I'm ready to give one.
Me too. This one comes from a patron of ours, Katie Seafried, and she nominates her twin sister, Mary.
So cute.
For making it over a year of breastfeeding. She says, "Our boys were born 2 weeks apart, my first and her second. I knew breastfeeding would not come natural or easy after having difficulties with my first baby. I breastfed my first for more than a year and had a big enough oversupply to donate to a friend mom and feed her baby breast milk for nearly a year also. My goal this time was to make it a year with my second and help my twin reach her goal. There were ups and downs, but with the help of you awesome ladies, the podcast, each other, we made it. Yay!
Katie, that's awesome.
Yeah, and they celebrated in Mexico last week. Hell yeah.
Cerveza.
All right. Well, what award are we going to give to Mary?
Mary and Katie, we're going to give you the Terrific Twinning Award. And please send us a photo of both of you and your babies that please. We can put on Instagram for our stories.
We're super proud of both of you guys. Thanks so much for nominating your sister, Katie. That was awesome. I love when y'all nominate each other. We're just here to hype each other up. I would also like to read a recent Apple review because those just make me feel good. And I hope they make you feel good, too.
They definitely make me feel good.
This one is from Michelle BB87. It is titled Informative and Hilarious. I've been listening to this podcast for years. Maureen and Heather are informative, unbiased, and hilarious. I feel like we're pals. Me too, bro. I even like their ads. I can't say that for any other podcast. Highly recommended for baby feeding info and just for a good time. Hell yeah.
That's all. Thanks for liking our ads.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're hoping for. Every time we record them, we're like, sorry.
We're like, I hope that was not boring.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of the Milk Minute Podcast.
If you guys love us and you want to hear more, you can subscribe to our new podcast, Beyond the Boob. Full access is available on Apple Podcast subscriptions and on our Patreon at patreon.com/milkminutepodcast.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's a milk minute.